Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I'm Brian Emhauser, and I hope you are enjoying this week as we lead up to the game of the week, maybe the game of the season, as the Seahawks will host the Rams tomorrow night, Thursday night football in Lumen Field, in what is increasingly looking like a weather-affected football game. And part of the reason I'm a little late getting this show started this morning, appreciate your patience for all that we're waiting, is I was just trying to find some research about how different players have performed in different weather, and it is not easy to find, to be honest. There's very few places that have weather-related information about players or games, and the ones that I've found have been somewhat inaccurate. For example, I was looking at Matt Stafford's history in games when it's been raining, and the place I was looking did not think that it was raining in Carolina this year, which it absolutely was. So, I ended up tossing most of that, but I will share with you a little bit about what I found in a bit. If you haven't done a first look with us, this is where we get really into the details, the nitty gritty about the upcoming opponent for the Seahawks. And there is no better opponent than the Los Angeles Rams. They are the best team in football. And as someone who follows and is a fan of the Seahawks, I say that without hesitation, because at this point, they have the resume for it. This is a team that has beat tons of quality opponents. They've also beat the Seahawks. They have beat the 49ers. They have, beat the Colts back when the Colts were playing at a better level. They've got a lot of victories under their belt, and they will have the MVP. It's almost a sure bet that Matt Stafford will win the MVP no matter what happens the rest of this season. They have a coach that has won a Super Bowl and has the respect of the league. And they've got a roster that is playing well on pretty much all sides of the ball. So I don't think that has to be up for debate. They have been the best team in football to this point. The Seahawks lost to them in the first game, 21-19, in a game that Sam Darnold threw four interceptions, as we all know. And it set up what is going to be a really interesting rematch. I think Rams fans, by all accounts, seem very confident in their team, as probably they should. And their general belief is that Sam Darnold is, that the Rams have his number. And I think that it's fine for people to believe that. I will take 1 second, just because, I'm a curmudgeon that way. People are like, check out Sam Darnold's numbers against the Rams last year. And I'm like, well, which game are you talking about? Because the first time he played the Rams last year, he had two touchdowns, no interceptions, and 128.7 rating. he was sacked three times. So it's not that long ago that Sam Darnold played pretty well against the Rams, and this was just the same Rams that he had a tough time with in the playoffs. So one of the main differences between those two games, his first and his second, is that his left tackle, Christian Darrisaw, went out in the at the end of the first half of that first game and was lost for the rest of the year. So that is maybe something to keep in mind for Seahawks fans, in that one of the big question marks for this game is the availability of Charles Cross, their left tackle. And as of now, he did not practice yesterday with that hamstring injury. Now, yesterday and Monday were walkthrough estimated practices. Nobody was really practicing, but the estimate was that he would not have practiced if they had. Today is the final day. We'll get game designations from Mike McDonald. He has been relatively tight-lipped about Charles Cross, but said that there is a possibility that he will play tomorrow. We will find out this afternoon. So I've got a bunch for you today. We'll get into all the data and the matchup and all that kind of stuff in about 15 minutes, 9 a.m. Pacific time. I will welcome in Dalton Wasserman of PFF. One of our favorite guests has been honestly like such a revelation is probably too strong, but he's been fantastic when we've had him on. Always has great insights, always looks at it from what feels like a objective and informed perspective as opposed to just parroting what everyone else says. So I was really happy to be able to talk to him this week ahead of this game. And we'll dive deep. Now, before I get into all of that, I know that there's a lot of folks that are interested in what's going on with the tickets. We reached 30,000 subs. And first things first, I now have possession of two additional tickets for the game tomorrow night. And not only do I have two tickets, but they were donated. And really, really want to thank Move Northwest Moving and Storage. They are a partner, a proud partner with the Seahawks. They specialize in residential and commercial moves, packing and secure storage with reliable service that the pros trust. Proud partners of the Seahawks. Please visit them, support them. This is very cool of them to give the tickets for this cause. Go to movenw.com. Also follow them on movenw on Instagram, because there's a chance that you could win another set of tickets. So if you don't get the tickets that I've got, follow them over on Instagram at movenw and you could win a pair yourself. So I've heard from folks. I've been getting submissions of people that want the tickets. I have got a pretty good idea. I've actually reached out to one person in particular, waiting to hear back from that person about whether it's going to work for them. But I appreciate all the reach outs and we will get these tickets into good hands. So Seahawks fans will be well represented. All right. So in the 15 minutes before we get Dalton on here, I want to go through a few things. So I started going through the injury. Let's go ahead. And for that reason, let's just go through the lineup changes that I think are worth considering for this game. So this is in my Tale of the Tape, which is published over on hawkblogger.com. And what I did here is basically took the lineups from week 11 on the left-hand side for both teams and put the projected players on the right-hand side for tomorrow night's game. And what you'll see is in blue, those are highlighted players that are different than the players that played in week 11. And then I've got in yellow, like a faint yellow, some question marks, players that we don't, that, like, or at least there's an additional bit of information to talk about. Now, I know some Seahawks fans are going to freak out because you see Ernest Jones in a light yellow. The reason I have him shaded as yellow is because one of the differences between the first game and this game was that Ernest Jones was playing hurt. He had just hurt his knee the week before. He played in this game, was not himself, clearly, you know, was not ready to play, and then didn't play in Tennessee the next week. So he is now, I think, much more healthy than he was the first time. So I just wanted to note, I think that's a pretty meaningful difference. This is not a question mark about whether he is going to be there. So let's go with the Seahawks first. I have Robbie Utes was the fullback in the first game, and he was a healthy and active this last game. So I've got that as a yellow question mark. Is Brady Russell going to be the fullback? Is Eric Saubert going to be a fullback? Is Robbie Utes going to be back? Don't know. This was one game. Hard to say what the long-term implications are. Next change, Elijah Arroyo played in the first game. He will not play in this game. Eric Saubert did not play in the first game. He will play in this game. So I think you get probably a little less threatening as a receiver, but you get, and remember, there was a couple of plays where Elijah Arroyo was the intended target for Sam Darnold in what turned into interceptions. So he was part of the game plan. It also didn't go exact, like Matt Hasselbeck even mentioned that there were some plays where the rookie maybe did not cross the safety's face the way a quarterback would expect him to. So there were some mistakes by the rookie as well. And Eric Saubert is a better blocker. So we'll see the implications of that. Olu Oluwatimi was the starting center the last time these teams played. Jalen Sundell will be back as the center for this one. We've got Charles Cross as that question mark. Brandon Peely was getting most of the third defensive tackle snaps the first game because Jaron Reed was not available. Jaron Reed's back, and I think that's pretty significant when it comes to run defense, and they're going to need every one of their interior defenders to play at a very, very high level to slow down that Rams run game. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then Julian Love did not play in the first game. He will play in this game. So Ty Okada was the starting safety there. Julian Love will be back. So Eric Saubert, Jalen Sundell, Jaron Reed, Julian Love, those are the ones that we know will be different. And then there's question marks about Charles Cross and about Robbie Utes, essentially, but not from a health perspective. And then the other piece here is we've got for the Rams, Davante Adams is the big question mark. We, as of now, the latest news is that he is not expected, like he will not be fully available no matter what, it sounds like. What they're maybe considering, according to Ian Rappaport, is that they might use him in red zone situations, which is an interesting kind of minimization of how he'd be used. But, you know, I think it's still, quote, up in the air about whether he will play. If he does not play, a player named Kanato Mumfield would be the guy that shows up and, joins the party, so to speak. He was the fourth, I think he was the third receiver the last time these guys played as far as snap counts. Sorry, I was distracted by chat. Let's try to keep chat friendly and supportive, guys. So Kanata Mumfield was the third receiver last time these teams played. He would essentially be the second receiver. The other change is that Jordan Whittington was getting a decent number of snaps the last time. And Tutu Atwell is back. He did not play. He was not available for that first game. So if the Rams need to go to three receiver sets, which is what has been their bread and butter until they started using 13 personnel more lately, Tutu Atwell would help there. But again, if Davante Adams isn't available, it's a pretty different three receiver look than they've had in the past. And then tight ends. Tyler Higbee was available in the first game. He is available to come off of IR this week, but Sean McVay has already said he will not come off IR for this game. It's too short of a week and not enough practice. So basically what was Colby Parkinson, Tyler Higbee, and Davis Allen now are Colby Parkinson, Terrence Ferguson, and Davis Allen. Terrence Ferguson played in the first game, but he was the fourth tight end in terms of snaps. He is getting significantly more snaps since Higbee's been out. Next change, Rob Havenstein also was eligible to come off IR this week. He will not, according to Sean McVay. But here's the thing. Rob Havenstein was really the biggest problem for the Rams on the offensive line. He had trouble in pass protection. The Seahawks were taking advantage of him. I think he got like a 19 grade pass blocking grade by PFF in that one. They have played Warren McClendon Jr. since, and he has been one of the best offensive tackles in football since he came in. So they have upgraded at right tackle. That is not a problematic miss of Rob Havenstein. I don't think even if Havenstein was healthy, I'm not sure he would get his job back. I think McClendon has really, really helped that team. He's a much better pass protector and maybe a better run blocker than Havenstein. So the Rams offensive line has gotten better. Then finally at the bottom, I've got Quinton Lake, who started the game for the Rams against the Seahawks last time, but he did exit with an injury that ended up putting him on IR. And Jalen McCullough played in the first game, but he is getting more snaps because of the injury to Quinton Lake. So is a player named Josh Wallace. So there's a couple of guys that are getting a little bit more snaps due to Quentin Lake being injured. But those are kind of some of the differences there. The biggest that we just don't know quite yet is Davante Adams. So I think that's the biggest thing to pay attention to. And then, you know, Quentin Lake is a guy that I highlighted in the first game as heading in as I think one of the most underrated defenders maybe in the NFL, and certainly, you know, on that Rams team. He allowed them to play a lot of dime. He was a little bit like Nicky Minori. He is not Nicky Minori, but he is, you know, available to be able to support against the run and cover, does a lot of things really well. So his loss, I think, is pretty significant. And I think it's affected that secondary in ways we'll talk about in a bit. In just a moment, we'll welcome in Dalton Wasserman and we'll go through some of these things in detail. But let me share a couple other pieces that are worth looking at. So this was, I went through and kind of, you know, we'll look at where they are now in all these rankings, but I think it's useful to take a look at where they've been of late. So this compares what the teams were doing before they played the last game in week 11 and then what they've done since. It does not include week 11 at all. So those stats are just for each team, are not part of this. The reason I did that is because I think it's useful to kind of get a feel for a snapshot of what the teams were looking like before they played the last game, and then a snapshot of what they've been like since that game. And keep in mind, these are EPA numbers, so they don't account for opponent in any way. But coming into that first matchup, Rams offense was really good, number 3 overall, going against a Seahawks defense that at that time was number 5 in EPA per play. And then EPA per dropback, the Rams were 2nd in the NFL. The Seahawks defense was 10th. So there was a little bit of a mismatch there. And then rushing, the Seahawks were best in rush EPA going against what was the 13th best Rams offense in rush EPA. So generally advantages there for the Rams, but not massive. And the one Seahawks advantage was in the run game. Now, if you look at where things are going now for that same thing, when the Rams are on offense, things have changed. The Rams have gone from 3-1 in EPA per play. They're the best offense in football the last 4 weeks. Well, yes, four weeks, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yes. And their passing game has dropped a little bit because Matt Stafford, believe it or not, Matt Stafford has more turnovers in the last 4 weeks than Sam Darnold. He's got 4 turnovers. Sam Darnold's got 2. So that affects EPA per dropback. And so they're 7th, which is not bad, but it's not 2. But the real story for the Rams offense is they had been a good but not great running team. And they are now the best running team in the NFL, and they are just crushing teams. So I think this is partially Warren McClendon and his effect, but there's other aspects there. So they've also faced some not as great rush defenses, but still they're playing really, really well. Similarly, the Seahawks defense has stepped up their game. So you've got a Seahawks defense that is also number 1 overall. So you got 1 versus 1. You've got the number 1 EPA per dropback defense since this last matchup. And they've actually slid back a little bit in run defense. They face some pretty tough opposition there. Bijan Robinson and Jonathan Taylor and such. But, you know, still good, just not number 1. So in some odd way, even though the Rams offense has just been a titan since that game, they are just clowning people. The Seahawks defense kind of matches up in terms of how they've stepped up their game as well. So that's one then versus now. The next one is if you look at the Seahawks on offense, they backslid on EPA per play from 10th to 15th. So we know the Seahawks offense has been not as good the last 4 games since that Rams game. Their EPA per dropback went from number one overall to 12th. And then their rush EPA, surprisingly, has improved from 26th to 18th. But here's the thing. So everyone knows, we've talked about how the Seahawks offense has slid back and been less efficient, less deadly than it was, less lethal than it was before. What I didn't know, at least before doing some of these numbers, is that the Rams defense has also backslid. They were the number two EPA per play defense going into that first game. They've been 13th since. They were the number three EPA per dropback defense. They're 14th since. They were the third rush EPA defense. They're 11th since. So if you look at the advantages, it actually was a bigger advantage for the Rams defense going into the last game than it is to this game, because both the Rams defense and the Seahawks defense has backslid. And in fact, the Rams defense has backslid a little bit more than the Seahawks offense. So I thought this was just an interesting way to, you know, see what's been going on in objective numbers. The Rams slide on defense is something that kind of caught my attention. It was something I had not known as much about. So last thing we'll look at here before we let Dalton get in here, we'll look at DVOA. And this is just, this is full season numbers, so we're not looking at recent or anything like that. You've got one versus two, one versus one, one versus one, one versus two. Like, these are two really, really good teams. And when the Rams are on offense and the Seahawks are on defense, I don't think it gets better than that in terms of matchup, whether it's the coaching, whether it's the players, whether it's the schemes, the strategy. It's just going to be fantastic to watch that again. And then, yeah, if you look at when the Rams are on defense, they've got meaningful advantages. They are, the fourth overall DVOA defense against the third overall DVOA against the ninth DVOA offense. So you see that, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but one of the places where there's an interesting question about advantages is the secondary for the Rams and what's been going on there of late. Emmanuel Forbes in particular was a guy that was absolutely balling the last time these two teams played. He has not been balling since then, but let's go ahead and bring on one of our favorite guests here, Dalton Wasserman of PFF, who can fill us in on all things Seahawks and Rams. Dalton, man, how are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. Brian, how are you feeling one day from the game? You feeling a little nervous, or how's the vibe up there in Seattle?
You know what? Honestly, it's bracing for impact, because not even from this game, I'm seeing forecasts starting to call for snow. I'm seeing like atmospheric rivers, thunderstorms. It's going to be wind in the 20 to 30 mile an hour gusts. And now it's supposed to all be happening during this game, and it could be like in the low 40s. So I think that's going to be a factor that honestly, most people have not started considering.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's something that's got to be taken into account, especially when you're talking about two really good defenses. And I think a big factor in this game, like you were just mentioning, one team's ability to run the football and the other one in Seattle, who has kind of struggled to do so. They need to find a way to run the ball and balance out this offense. I think it has been a problem of late. They've got the backs. They've absolutely got the backs with Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet to be able to, but the offensive line's got to execute, and then they just have to find a way to create those explosive plays.
So when you first look at this game, Dalton, where's your mind go?
My mind instantly goes to Sam Darnold. I know it's the quarterback, and obviously he was at the center of it all in the first loss to the Rams with the four interceptions. But it really, he hasn't gotten fully back on track since that, right? It's been five games now of Darnold being a bit inconsistent, the offense looking a bit inconsistent. And something that I feel like I've seen, and watching over the last five games again, is that teams are more content now in defense to really sit back on Seattle, right? And what I mean by that is playing those two high coverages, leaving safeties back, and basically daring them to do two things. One, run the ball. And the problem for Seattle is that they have the lowest yards per carry mark in the league against two high coverages, right? You would think, okay, well, why does that matter, the coverage versus the run game? That's one less guy in the box that you're dealing with, right? And they're so used to teams stacking the box. So they got two tight ends and 12 personnel and everything out there, and teams are stacking the box. It's really an offense designed the way it was being run to beat defenses that are only have one high safety out there. As teams have sat back and dared them to run the ball and dared Darnold to throw it underneath, that's really where Seattle has struggled, and you have to be able to run the football to counter that. And we've seen that in the past with the Kansas City Chiefs, with the Cincinnati Bengals, with the Buffalo Bills at times. At a certain point, your offense and your passing game gets so good that defenses go, all right, we're just going to not give up home runs. We're going to make you hit singles all the way down the field. And right now, Seattle's not hitting enough singles, and that's why it looks so inconsistent.
Yeah, well, and the Rams are an interesting study in that regard because they obviously played, I think, like 60% dime the first time these two teams went against each other. Part of who was allowing them to do that was Quentin Lake, who got injured in that game and won't be back for this one. And that Rams secondary, Manuel Forbes, Kobe Durant, these are two guys that had been playing quite well. Their last three games, both of these guys are just getting torched. So what's going on with the Rams secondary? Why is it struggling more lately?
I think one factor is definitely that, especially you saw it with the Lions last week, teams are attacking them over the middle of the field. They're getting a lot of in-breaking routes going, and they're really attacking. You know, the Rams are a zone. Chris Shula runs a zone-heavy defense. They're attacking the seams in the middle of this defense, and they're getting rid of the football quickly. If you're going to take a shot on this Rams team, you have to do it quickly before that defensive line gets there, Jared Verse and Byron Young and those guys, because they can play such dominant football, and you don't want to hold on to the football too long. So I think it's really a matter of the last few teams they've played, they've just taken their chances, right? I think, you know, you look at Jared Goff and the way he played last week, he played really well, right? And he was throwing the ball down the middle of the field, and they were creating, you know, down the seams of this defense. You look even a couple weeks ago, you know, when they lost to Carolina, Bryce Young, his best moments in that game were when he was taking his chances. You do have to gamble a little bit with this defense. They're really good at all three levels. But like you mentioned, Forbes and some of these guys at corner, they're not known as the best corners in football. It's not, you know, Sauce Gardner or Pat Sertan or, you know, some of those guys. So at a certain point, you get a one-on-one matchup. Yes, take advantage of it. I thought Darnold did a good job of that with Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the first game, but he's going to have to find that effectiveness he had in earlier in the season over the middle of the field again. That's where I think you want to attack this Rams defense.
Yeah, just to put numbers behind the words there, Forbes in his last three games has given up 14 catches and 18 targets for 236 yards and three touchdowns, including one game where he gave up a perfect passer rating of 158.3. Kobe Durant has given up 11 catches and 14 targets for 168 yards and four touchdowns. He's given up passer ratings of 152.1, 118.8, and 158.3, perfect passer rating in those games. So, especially Forbes, he was a star in that first game, making that great pass breakup on the pass to Rashid Shaheed. What have you seen in terms of Rashid Shaheed starting to get integrated into the offense? Do you think that he can be part of what is different in this game?
Absolutely. I mean, you talked about, and the talk with Shaheed is always him getting so vertical and the deep ball being such a big part of his game, right? Because he has the blazing speed. But I think they've done a better job lately of using him horizontally. When you talk about crossing routes, you talk about even jet sweeps and things like that behind the line of scrimmage, he can do so many things for you. When you have a guy that has that 4.2, 4.3 speed, you got to find different ways to use him than just, oh, go ball or skinny post, right? You get those guys where it's like, okay, the safeties are, again, same theme, the safety are going to sit back. So that's not going to make Shaheed as effective down the field. You've got to find other ways to use him horizontally. I think they've done a better job of that. Also, special teams has been a big factor. The big kick return that he had for a touchdown, I believe it was against Atlanta, that really flipped that game in Seattle's favor there. I think those are the moments where you go, okay, Shaheed's really helping us in more than one way now, as opposed to just being a decoy to take safeties off the top of the defense.
Well, you talk about Darnold, and we'll switch sides and talk about the Rams offense here in a second. But Dalton, when you look at Darnold, it's very clear to me that his coaches have told him, and I think Mike McDonald's told Clint Kubiak as well, all right, enough with the turnovers. Like, let's not take as many chances. But it also looks now that he's not trying to fit the ball in the tight windows the way he was before, and he was doing a really good job of it. And so what do you do in this situation where the Seahawks have now turned the ball over zero times twice in their last four games, which is good, and Mike McDonald's undefeated in Seattle when his team has not turned the ball over, but you're sacrificing what seems to be a lot of explosiveness in the offense.
It's a really good call, and I think something to mention here, two of his last three games, the Minnesota game and the Indianapolis game, are his two lowest average depth of target games this season. So you can feel it. I think it is in response a bit to the turnovers and the four interceptions he had against the Rams, but also again, these two high safety shells, they don't allow you to just take shots whenever you want like you were getting the first 10 weeks of the season, right? So Darnold has had to adjust, and you've seen more times lately that he's had to work off of his first read and get somewhere else, and his feet seem a little more unsettled in the pocket, right? I think there is an element to this of trying to settle him down, and Kubiak has to get back to creating those explosive plays instead of trying to force them and just hope we get the one-on-one matchup, right? And again, this comes with the run game needing to be better. So much of their success came off play action earlier in the year. Well, if teams don't respect the run game, they're not going to bite on play action fakes. They're going to sit back and go, okay, go ahead, run the play action fake, and we're just not going to go ahead and run it, please. I mean, they're really basically daring them to do it. So offensively, schematically, they're not creating as many explosives. Look, when they get man-to-man coverage, Smith and Jigba all day. I mean, he's going to take that chance, and that's what's still been working lately. But to me, there has to be a more controlling factor schematically with Kubiak and with Darnold of how are we going to get defenses to bite up again? How are we going to get him up here? The easy way to do it is running the football. The second way to do it is Sam Darnold just being more patient and calming down and taking what the defense gives him.
Well, there's some injury news, at least on the Seahawks offense and Rams defense, that I'm curious your take on. So Charles Cross is a question mark for this game at left tackle with a hamstring injury. I actually believe he's going to potentially play, but we will find out later today from Mike McDonald. And then Braden Fisk with an ankle may not play in this game for the Rams. What do you think the implications of both of those would be?
I think Cross being out for this game would be devastating. When you talk about a guy who is capable of blocking Jared Verse in those one-on-one situations, and you need as many of your starters up front as possible as you can against the Rams, because they run so many stunts and so many games up front that you have to be able to communicate, right? And we already know the interior is very, very young, and you talk about, you know, just a team that needs to be able to execute on the inside for this offense to succeed. That would be a devastating blow if Cross doesn't play. And then you mentioned Braden Fisk. Look, he's arguably the Rams' best interior pass rusher, and you know, it makes life a little bit easier on those inside guys. Obviously, Kobe Turner, not easy to deal with. Puna Ford in the run game, not easy to deal with. But Fisk is really a guy that comes in a lot on those passing downs and adds some extra energy to the interior pass rush. So it would really help a lot that young Seattle interior if Fisk was out. But the Cross injury would be concerning to me, whether he's out for this game or if he's at significantly less than 100%.
Well, those aren't the only injuries that people are talking about. We flip to the other side of the ball with the Rams when they have it. You've got a Rams offense that is just lapping the field right now. I mean, I think last time I checked DVOA, they not only were the number one, they're like twice the next offense. Like, they're just killing people. They're great on the ground. They're great in the air. And somehow, Dalton, they managed to actually get better at right tackle when Rob Epstein went out, and DeVore McClendon's been playing really, really well. But Davante Adams, it sounds like at best he will be maybe available for sub packages like red zone, is what Ian Rappaport said this morning. And, you know, that feels like a potentially significant impact to this game for a Rams offense that people forget did not do well in the first matchup between these two teams. So yeah, curious for you. Obviously, you got Davante Adams maybe out, and then differences for the Seahawks. Julian Love didn't play in the first game. Jaron Reed didn't play in the first game. Ernest Jones was playing hurt and actually did not play the next week because he really wasn't ready to come back. What do those injuries or recoveries mean for this game?
So we'll start with Adams first, and this really affects the Rams offense in two ways, whether he's compromised or just not playing at all. Number one, in the open field, you know, Puka Nacua has arguably been the best receiver in football alongside Jackson Smith and Jigba. What Davante Adams brings, though, is another answer to man-to-man coverage. Sean McVay can scheme up against zone coverage with Nacua and the motions and tight ends and everything he wants to do all day long, but at a certain point in the game, you need guys guys who are going to win that one-on-one battle, and you know you can just play one-on-one football. Davante Adams has the 10th highest receiving grade for us against man coverage in the NFL. That's a big deal. That's the improvement. It's the entire reason they brought him in to replace Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp was not beating man coverage anymore. Davante Adams can still do that. He's as savvy as a route runner as there is in the league. And you mentioned it. He's been the best receiver in the red zone in football this year. He's just such a weapon for them. Again, one-on-one situations that plays down there in the end zone. I think as far as guys like Jaron Reed and Ernest Jones, especially being 100%, you need to load up everything you can to stop this run game as well. Look, Matthew Stafford might win the MVP. You've got enough to deal with Nacua and Adams and all the weapons. But what Kyren Williams and Blake Corum are adding to this offense with the balance that they bring on the ground, and you mentioned it with McClendon at right tackle, the sheer power that this team brings on their offensive line, getting downhill, double team, just going straight at you. They don't mess around up front. You've got to have your most physical players at 100% for a game like this, especially in harsh conditions. I think Jones especially is super important, right? As kind of the leader in the middle of it all, next to Drake Thomas there at linebacker, who's been really good since he's gotten a starting role. But Ernest Jones is really the leader of that defense, and I think in run defense especially, he's going to be huge in this game.
So everyone's like, oh, well, the game against the Seahawks was maybe a one-off problem for McVay and Stafford, and it won't happen again. The argument against that is the last time that McVay and Stafford went to Seattle last year, they also struggled significantly in that game. And so while a lot of attention is going to be on Sam Darnold and Clint Kubiak, and can they figure out how to beat Chris Shula, it feels like Sean McVay has a little work to do as well to figure out what Mike McDonald's been doing.
I mean, look, it's just a really talented defense that's hard to score against them, right? And Mike McDonald's one of the best schemers in the NFL, but you just look at the sheer amount of talent at all three levels and what you ask for out of a defense, especially against an offense like this. Are we physical at the line of scrimmage? Yeah, Leonard Williams, Byron Murphy. I love what DeMarcus Lawrence has brought off the edge, especially in run defense. That's step number one. Then that second level at linebacker. I feel like the cohesion at that position as the year has gone on and Ernest Jones and Drake Thomas have gotten more reps together. That's really gotten better as the year has gone on. Plus, you have Nicky Menwori, who I really think is a big X factor in this defense, right? When you talk about teams now needing that player like Kyle Hamilton, like Derwin James, who's kind of plays this tweener role between a linebacker and a safety, and it's just kind of, it's become like the joker in these defenses, these modern defenses now that you need, because you can't line up too often three linebackers and get in a base defense. You need someone athletic enough to cover, and yet you need someone willing to help and run support. Nicky Menwori, I think, has really been a huge X factor. And then in the secondary, really, it's gotten so much better since Devin Witherspoon got healthy, right? And it's funny to see him now with the emergence of Menwori, with Witherspoon now playing mostly on the outside, and it was more 50-50, like, say, a Trent McDuffie for Kansas City before that. But I really think it's just a super talented defense. They give you a lot of different looks, and they can beat you in a lot of different ways, man. I think what you have on this side of the ball is just a wicked talented Rams offense against a wicked talented Seahawks defense, right? And Sean McVay, it's one of the hardest puzzles that he has to solve, because there's not a whole lot of weak spots that you can just attack over and over and over again.
Well, so let's now paint the full picture, Dalton. You've got the Rams offense, number one in the NFL, or Seahawks defense by, you know, DVOA and some other measures, and EPA per play last few weeks, number one in the NFL. Then you've got Sam Darnold and his issues, and you've got Clint Kubiak, and you got Chris Shula in there. I actually was looking at recently, the Rams defense has actually slid the last 4 weeks almost as much, actually more than the Seahawks offense. So it feels like those two are also pretty evenly matched. And you got the weather, and you got Thursday night, and you got the injuries. What do you expect to happen in this game?
You're going to get a tight game, especially in the conditions. You're going to get, I think, another very good defensive ball game from both sides. I do think the Rams, you know, they obviously the Lions last week, you know, in a high scoring game, that's a very good offense you're playing in Detroit there as well, that can do a lot of different things. But I think you're going to get a tight ball game, a defensive ball game. But the one thing I worry about the most for Seattle is this consistent inability to run the football, especially against a style of defense like the Rams. So I would worry about that. They need to find some way. And even if it's with, you know, trick plays, or just finding a few explosive runs, if it's Rashid Shaheed making a difference on a jet sweep, or just finding ways to open things up in the run game and get around this Rams defensive line. Because what you don't want is Sam Darnold just, you know, dropping back every play and having that front four pin their ears back, right? So I think that's the one bit of imbalance that I see in this game, is that if the conditions get harsh, I trust the Rams' ability to run the football more, which makes me think if Seattle's going to win, they may need Sam Darnold's best game of the season, and we haven't seen that in quite some time.
Yeah, so that all makes sense, and I'm kind of curious when you look at that Seahawks run defense going up against that Rams run offense. That was the lesser story, too. It was actually the Rams' run game that kind of broke open a couple plays early that allowed them to score some points. But then that got bottled up. So Seahawks run defense has been one of the most consistent parts of the NFL this year. What do they have to do to be able to slow down what's been a just juggernaut Rams run game?
You've really got to hold up well right at the point of attack. I think more than any other team in football, the only other one I can think of really is the Buffalo Bills, probably, where the Rams just are so physical and they get so downhill with two and three tight ends on the field and these duo schemes with all these double teams they run. There's no tricks. There's no, constant. I mean, there's motion all the time and they insert receivers and extra blockers. They just put so many big, powerful bodies in the middle of it that you really just have to bring your A game on the defensive line. I would expect to see some five-man defensive fronts from Mike McDonald in this game. He's not averse to that for sure, but you've just got to buckle up, man. I think that's really the hardest part is when you go, well, schematically, do we need to do this or that or get in these fronts? They just line up and they whip you. I mean, and that's really the thing is that in their home environment in these conditions, that front seven plus Emanuori, I could call it a front eight at certain points in the game, they really need to be able to just say, you know what? We got to buckle up and be physical. They only gave up 119 rushing yards last time in this game. That's pretty good, but it was at 5.4 yards a clip. I think they're going to have to you got to buckle up. I mean, I wish I could tell you there was something different or fancy that Seattle's defense is going to have to do, but when you're playing this Rams team, they just make you be the more physical team. And if you're not willing to do that, they will run you flat over.
All right, so give us the one thing that would give the Seahawks the best chance of pulling off this win.
I think force a couple turnovers, find a couple turnovers. If Adams is compromised, for sure, you've got to double Nacua and maybe force Stafford into some tight window throws. And look, he can make them, but if you can force him into a couple turnovers, we saw it in the Carolina game a few weeks ago, that was really the difference in that game. And then I think offensively, who is going to step up aside from Jaxon Smith-Njigba, right? Whether that's running or passing, right? Is it a big game now from an A.J. Barner? Is it Rashid Shaheed? Is this game the reason that you brought him in to create explosive plays after the catch, right? That's going to be the biggest factor to me. Smith-Njigba is going to get his. He's a matchup nightmare. Anytime the Rams are in man coverage, yeah, throw it a number 11. I get it, man. He's been maybe the best receiver in football, but somebody else has to step up. I think Shaheed, they might try to make him that guy to just, again, you only need him, especially with a home run hitter like that, you only need one or two plays that can flip it upside down. And then again, this Rams team just makes it play all 60 minutes. But that's really going to be the key to it, is somebody other than JSN has to be a star on this field, because there wasn't enough of that last time.
Dalton, tell folks what's coming up from you over on PFF and where they can find you.
Absolutely. On PFF.com, as always, myself and all our other great analysts have our written content on there. PFF Plus subscription is 30% off right now with the promo code HOLIDAY30. And then, as always, on YouTube, the PFF NFL show, where we'll be previewing this game in just about an hour here, and the PFF College Football show for any of those interested. I don't know if you have any Oregon fans out there in your area. I know it's not kind of a heated rivalry there, too, but they got their game coming up along with the other playoff games that were covered on the College Football show too.
Love it, man. Dalton, appreciate you as always. Great stuff. And I will certainly be tuning in to your PFF preview here in a bit. Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Appreciate you as always, Brian. Thank you.
All right. That is Dalton Wasserman of Pro Football Focus. Good stuff from him. And make sure you give the show a like and a subscribe, and give them a like and subscribe if you haven't already. I think Dalton's spot on in a lot of what he said. We're going to go over more details of this matchup in just a second. But before we do that, good chance to say, make sure you go over to simplyseattle.com, use promo code HawkBlogger15. That will get you not only 15% off of anything you want to buy, your favorite Seattle sports gear, Seahawks, Mariners, Sonics, Kraken, whatever. But also, until December 24th, 5% of your purchase price will also go to Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient Family Assistance Fund, which provides vital help with transportation and temporary lodging for patients fighting for their lives. And if you use, if you buy one of the Simply Good hoodies for $25, another $5 will go to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. So great stuff going on from Simply Seattle. And then go over and grab the Sleeper app. Great time to do it. Keep up with fantasy football finals, all that stuff, as well as the NBA, the NHL, anything else you love. And you can get $20 without even making a deposit. And if you use promo code Hawks, you can get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right. So let's get back to it. When Dalton was coming on, I was going through lineups and some other stuff with you guys. So let me bring this back. And I was going through actually these recent trends, right? And then I got into DVOA. So let's get back to DVOA quickly. So the thing here on the DVOA side is, as I said, very, very evenly matched teams. Where there's a big advantage is the Rams run defense is ranked fourth overall and the Seahawks rush offense is 23rd. If you didn't have that, there basically would be like really, really even teams. But you do. So I think Dalton, that's what Dalton's kind of keying on, is that the Rams have been really good at stopping the run and the Seahawks have not been good at running the ball. That's just the reality. So with that in mind, it's worth calling out the Seahawks did run the ball pretty well against the Rams in the first game. They had 135 yards on the ground. That's one of the Seahawks' better rushing games of the year. Both Ken Walker and Zach Charbonnet played pretty well. Ken Walker, I think, had like 67 yards rushing and about 45 yards receiving. So, you know, 135 yards, for what it's worth, is the third highest total for the Seahawks in a game they were losing the whole way. So they really did stick with the ground game and, you know, pulled back into that one. But there's no question. It has not been necessarily a strength, and there's still question about whether Jalen Sundell is going to be someone who can be a good run-blocking center and whether that's part of the issue. Special teams. This is the biggest mismatch between the three units. The Seahawks have the second-ranked DVOA special teams. The Rams are 25th. So has not been a good special teams group for the Rams. It makes it even more painful that the Rams had that punt that went out at the one-yard line, considering that their punter is 26th in the NFL in net yards per punt. But that was like the punt of the year, no question. Could argue that that won them the game. But then you get into how these teams hold up receiver-wise against defending receivers. And the Seahawks have become pretty elite. They're number one in the NFL against defending wide receiver ones, sixth against wide receiver twos, and ninth against wide receiver threes. They run four deep at like high-quality starter at the cornerback position right now with Devin Witherspoon and Josh Jobe and Tariq Woolen and Nicky Minwori. And then their tight end numbers have actually improved as well. They're up to 19th. They were in the like high 20s not so long ago. But if you look at the Rams, this is a place where they have struggled. They gave up a ton of yards. They gave up over 100 yards receiving to Amon-Ra St. Brown in the first half last week. Jameson Williams was also torching them. So they're 20th in the NFL in defending wide receiver ones. They are 22nd in the NFL in defending wide receiver threes. They got back Akella Witherspoon, who I thought was going to, you know, help solidify that cornerback room. He did not play well when he came back and, in fact, was a healthy scratch in this last game, which I think has confused some of the Rams folks and I think is just a statement of that Darius Williams and the other two guys, Kobe Durant and Emmanuel Forbes, are just ahead of Akella Witherspoon on the depth chart. So I don't think they love what they're getting from Akella Witherspoon. But let's take a look at when the Seahawks have the ball on offense, all right? So I'm going to turn off chat here so you guys can see this a little bit better. So obviously this is a situation where the Rams are the Rams have a lot of advantages here. And again, this is looking at the full season numbers. What I think jumps out initially is just all the run game stuff, right? Which we've already kind of talked about. All this stuff here, rushing yards, yards per rush, rush EPA. Seahawks are toward the bottom of the league in those numbers, and the Rams are top 10. But another thing that is worth kind of knowing is the Seahawks third down after this last game has dropped to 19th in third down conversions on offense. The Rams have been very good at 7th. Red zone for the Seahawks, also a really big deal, 17th. And the Rams defense has been 2nd in red zone defense. That's going to be a big thing. That was a big part of why the Seahawks lost the first game. Rams scored touchdowns in the red zone. Seahawks kicked field goals. Here's a number I don't have in this article, but is true. Since this game, since week 12, so the game happened in week 11, since week 12, the Seahawks and Rams are tied for first in the NFL in percentage of their drives that result in points. I'll say that again. The last 4 weeks, last four games that have been played, yes, while the Seahawks have been struggling on offense, they are tied with the Rams for the highest percentage of their drives that result in points. 57.5% of their drives are resulting in points. But the big difference is that the Rams are scoring touchdowns and the Seahawks are kicking field goals. So that is where it has felt less dangerous of a Seahawks offense. But it is worth calling out that they are putting up points. They are just not putting up touchdowns. So that's going to be a really, really big part of this game. Something to watch. Another thing I think I just look at in general is that the Rams defense is 3rd in EPA per play. The Seahawks offense has dropped to 13th. And I think that's about right. Like the Seahawks not quite playing like a top 10 offense at this point. And the Rams defense has been essentially a top 5 unit all year. Although, as I showed you earlier, of late, they have slid down a little bit. Other things that kind of stood out to me on this front, interception rate, you know, that obviously showed up the first time. Seahawks are 29th. The Rams defense is 9th. Turnovers, Seahawks are 31st, second worst team in turning the ball over. This has been a huge bugaboo. And the Rams defense is 6th in terms of taking the ball away. So when you get down into like individual players and matchups, which I want to spend a second on here, I mean, the Rams defensive front is great. It is. There's no question. Jared Verse, Byron Young, great off the edge. Kobe Turner, Braden Fisk, if he plays, Puna Ford, been great in the middle. And Josiah Stewart on the edge, Tyler Davis in the middle have been good rotational players as well. So they've got a lot of depth and a lot of talent. People, I think, focus on the pass rush potential for that group. I honestly think it's the run defense that they've done this year that has really elevated that football team. And Jared Verse is one of the best run defending edges in football, similar to DeMarcus Lawrence in that regard. Puna Ford has just been his on-off splits in terms of the Rams' ability to defend the run have been huge. He's been everything they hoped he would be. And then the fact that that group has been as good as it is has allowed them to play their dime defense and play with a lot of defensive backs like they did the first time. And I think they played about 60% dime against the Seahawks. And for people that don't know, that's two extra defensive backs on the field. And they also sat on a bunch of routes. Like they were convinced and they rightly guessed that Sam Darnold was going to be so eager to get rid of the ball and avoid sacks that he would maybe force the ball into tight spaces that weren't there. That's what he did. So their safeties, their corners were sitting on routes, sitting on the sticks, jumping the ball. That does open up the potential for double moves. And that's something that could show up in this game. Wouldn't be surprised if the Seahawks try to get them early on something like that. And one of the parts that's kind of curious, and I've been trying to nail this down, but it's a little hard because I'm kind of getting different information from different places. But the Rams, like their ability to create pressure has been, in some ways, like from when I watch it, it's not as good as it's been. And this is a story I covered coming into the first game. On the other hand, you know, if I look at their pressures the last few weeks over on, you know, Next Gen Stats, they've had pretty good pressure performances the last couple of games. So I don't know, like my eyes tell me that they are not quite getting home the way they had been. I'm going to pull this up again so I make sure I've got the right numbers here. But when I look at the pressure numbers, at least for the Rams, you know, they had a 35.7% pressure rate against the Lions, a 48% pressure rate against the Cardinals. Cardinals one I kind of just throw out. The Cardinals are just, they like gave up in that game. That was so ugly. They only had 7 pressures against the Panthers. Now, the Panthers have a really good offensive line, and part of what was working for the Panthers in that game is that the offensive line was dictating terms. They were able to run down the Rams' throats in that game, and then they were able to convert a couple big fourth downs and you know, really torture Emmanuel Forbes in that game. But as far as sacks go, you know, the Rams had 1 sack against the Lions. They had 2 sacks against the Panthers. They had 4 against the Bucks. So they've been all right there, but it just hasn't, for my eyes, been quite as lethal as I expected that pass rush to be. Now, when I look at the Rams and their ability to defend the run, one of the things I like to look at is how people do when you're running outside the tackles versus inside the tackles. And the Rams the last couple of weeks have done really well defending runs outside the tackles. The 2 weeks before, especially against the Panthers, they did not do very well. But where I saw the Panthers getting a lot of their yards was between the tackles. And if I look at that Panthers game, they had 80 yards rushing between the tackles, and really just kind of grounded out there. Similarly, the Cardinals only had 23 yards. They averaged almost 5 yards per carry between the tackles. And there was a 0% stuff rate, meaning like the Rams just have not been stuffing runs down the middle. Keep in mind, the Seahawks' lowest stuff rate of the season, meaning that the percentage of their runs that resulted in 0 or negative yards, came against the Rams. It's only 5.7% of Seahawks runs against the Rams were stuffed. So it was a pretty productive game. It wasn't their highest yards per carry or that kind of stuff, but it was a pretty productive run game for the Seahawks in that one. So I'll be really curious to see, one, if the Rams sitting on routes shows up in this one, and two, if the Seahawks are able to get any push in the run game. I mean, this is clearly like put up or shut up time. There's no more time for them to figure this out. They've got to start getting more productive on the ground. I told you the numbers for Forbes and Kobe Durant the last 3 weeks have been awful. Pretty much cannot be worse. And the other thing that I think probably got lost in that first game is the Seahawks actually had 5 scoring drives in that game. The Rams only had 3. Again, it was problematic because it was field goals instead of touchdowns. But after that first interception, the Seahawks scored on their next 3 drives. And then, you know, I think they scored on 4 of their first 6 drives. They also had an 84-yard touchdown drive late in the fourth quarter that gave them a chance to then also have a 50-plus-yard drive that started at their own one to get into field goal range. So even though the interceptions are what everyone's going to remember for good reason, this wasn't as much of a terrible performance overall by the offense as, you know, maybe you would remember. And even to now, to this point, the 414 yards the Seahawks had against the Rams is the most yards any offense has put up against that Rams defense. So we will see. When we get to looking at when the Rams have the ball, let me pull open that view for you guys. We can take a look at that. I have so many tabs open. It's silly. All right. So when you look at when the Rams have the ball on offense, you get just great versus great. I mean, those are very narrow advantages in either direction. The biggest advantage for either team is that the Seahawks defense is number two in the NFL in third down defense, and the Rams are 21st on offense in converting third downs. Now, the Rams don't generally need to convert third downs because they convert to first on first and second down probably more than any other team in the league. But they have struggled a bit on third down. You know, there's places where the Seahawks have minor advantages. There's places where the Rams have minor advantages. But this essentially is just strength against strength is what this matchup is. And one of the things I would kind of bring up that I think is an interesting piece here is this tweet from Ben Solak. So this was looking at the Rams 13 personnel, and this is three tight end usage. The thing there is that the Rams have been doing this at just a massive rate. The last 2 weeks, it has been by far their highest percentage of personnel groupings, meaning that their three wide receiver group has been dipping at the same rate. And the other part of this that's really important is that the Seahawks have been the only team really to decimate that 13 personnel package. The Seahawks are uniquely set up to be able to slow down the Rams 13 personnel. I think this is one of the biggest stories of this game because the Rams are used to being able to go into 13 and either just run the ball down the opponent's throats or, you know, pass over them. Colby Parkinson has been scoring touchdowns at like an insane rate. He's got three touchdowns in the past two games. He's got at least one touchdown in five of the last six games. But the Seahawks don't go to a heavy box when the Rams go to 13 or any team does. They stay in their essentially nickel group with Nicky Minwori on the field. And when I talked to the Seahawks heading into that first matchup, including Mike McDonald, they seemed to be very confident that they were going to be able to handle that 13 personnel group from the Rams. Then they went out and they did it. The negative 0.58 EPA per play when in 13 personnel was by far the Rams' worst performance of the season. There's only two other teams that have had held that group to negative EPA per play. And, you know, they were less than half as effective as the Seahawks were in this regard. The other reason that this is a really big deal is if Davante Adams cannot play or cannot play a lot, like cannot play outside of the red zone, then you'd think that the Rams are going to be more likely to try to lean and live in 13 personnel even more in this game. And that could play right into the Seahawks' hands. So this is a really, really key schematic aspect of this game to keep an eye on. Other things that I see in this matchup worth kind of calling out is, as I said, it was some explosive runs that that I think were a big part of opening up that game last time. I talked to you about Rob Havenstein being a weak link. He had a 19.9 pass block grade that first time. Since then, Warren McClendon Jr. has been the fifth highest graded tackle in the NFL since week 12. Overall, 85.9 grade. So he has been fantastic. Puka Nacua, as good of a player as he is, and there's not many that are better, he had 7 catches for 75 yards in week 11. That was one of only 2 games this year where he had was held without a catch of 20 yards or more. You can imagine the Seahawks are going to, you know, roll even more coverage his way, try to take him away even more in this one. And I'm not convinced that Kanata Mumfield is going to be a guy that is able to really pick up the slack, and we'll see. We will see on Kanata Mumfield, as well as Xavier Smith and Jordan Whittington. Those are guys that might be asked to step up at the receiver position. The other thing that I'd kind of call out here is that while the Rams do like playing 13 personnel, they're not like the most physical. Like Tyler Higbee is a more physical tight end. He will not be there for this game. Parkinson, Davis Allen is, I think he fits that mold, but Ferguson, Terrence Ferguson and Colby Parkinson are not the most physical players. They're willing, but they got bullied a little bit in the first matchup. And there's one other graphic that I figured I would share with you guys, which is this is what I was talking about with Dalton about kind of a storyline that I feel like is not discussed enough, which is that Mike McDonald has had really good success against Sean McVay. And if you look at the week 9 game last year and you look at the week 11 game this year, you're talking about a heavily negative EPA per play game team. They were 23% third down conversion the first time, 18% third down conversion the next time, success rate 39% the first time, 38% the next time. So, I think there's part of the reaction, logical reaction is, man, you know, it's going to be hard to hold down McVay and Stafford 3 times in a row. And I think that's true. At the same time, people are saying, like, the Rams are going to do that to Sam Darnold. And I think that's a reasonable thing to expect. I don't know that the Rams have really figured out the Seahawks defense yet. And that's going to be tough to do on a short week with maybe without one of your top receivers and also in bad weather. The Rams are, by the way, I'll show you one other little graphic here that I was working on before we got to this. Let me see if I can find it. I was looking at the Rams weather and record in cold weather games, and this is it. So let me put this up here for you guys. So in games where it was 51 degrees and below, 51 is the current scheduled high for tomorrow in Seattle, the Rams are 2-6. This is regular season games. This is since 2001 when Matt Stafford joined. And that includes losing to Carolina this year. So this has not been their best. Similarly, Mike McDonald and the Seahawks over the last 2 seasons actually are 5-2 in these games. And I didn't really love this graphic quite as much. So, but I will show it anyway, because I have it. Mike McDonald and Seahawks are 5-2 in the same level of game, same type of game. And that's just temperature. That does not include rain. It does not include, wind. And I think the wind might end up being the bigger factor in this one because it's going to affect kicking. It's going to affect passing. It's going to affect punting. So I think that's another one to really keep an eye on. Speaking of special teams, here's a look at the special teams rankings. And Jason Myers, 6-for-6 last time. His field goal accuracy is moving up the ranks. The Rams have struggled in that regard. Now, they have signed their new guy, Harold Mevis. And I'm going to take a look because I'm curious. I think he, from all that I've seen, he's been making his kicks. So Harold Mevis is 5-for-5 on his field goals. He has only one field goal over 50 yards, and he's made all of his extra points. So he's been fine for them. They have not kicked a lot of 50-plus yard field goals. So that would be something that if you had to do that in outside inclement weather, that could be something. And you might have some of those show up in a game like this. I talked to you about the Rams punting situation where they are 26th in the NFL in net yards per punt. Seahawks are 5th in the NFL in punt returns, 4th in kick returns. Don't know. I mean, this is a pretty big advantage for the Seahawks in some ways, but it didn't turn out that way in the last game between these teams as their punter pinned the Seahawks back. As far as what I put down for keys to win, I think that if the Rams are able to run the ball effectively, that by itself probably would be enough for them to be in really good position to win. If they are able to do that and win the turnover battle, then I think it's very unlikely the Seahawks can win the game. For the Seahawks, I think that, you know, Matt Stafford, he threw more than just one turnover-worthy pass last week. There was another Amik Robertson pass that he just dropped. The Seahawks cannot afford to drop these passes when Matt Stafford gives them a chance. They have to. I think winning the turnover battle would be a huge, huge thing for the Seahawks in this game, something they have not had much of this year. The other thing that I'd say, while the run game is going to be a big part of the conversation, if you can get JSN and Rashid Shaheed going, I really do feel like that is your biggest advantage on that side of the ball, is your receivers against their corners. They were not able to exploit that quite as much as you'd want the first time. But like, that's a matchup where I think you want to try to see if the Seahawks can get that going. And so we will find out not that long from now. It's going to be crazy. Before I forget, I'm just double checking. Okay. So I have found the recipient of the tickets that I'm giving away. Just got confirmation. This is someone who is going to be, they just bought plane tickets. They're going to fly from Anchorage, Alaska. His name's Ian. And Ian has been a Seahawks fan his whole life, went to O'Day High School, and has been getting his son into the Seahawks for a while. The last time they went was not as good of an experience, and was really hoping that this would be a true Seahawks football experience. And I'm a sucker for parents and kids going to games. And I think this is going to be a special one to be at. So I appreciate everyone that reached out and were interested in these tickets. I appreciate even more the folks over at Move Northwest Moving and Storage, who donated the tickets, save me some hassle. I really appreciate that. And let's get as many Seahawks fans in those seats as possible. I think there's going to be a good chance of that. Let me give one more plug here to Move Northwest Moving and Storage. This is a proud partner of Seahawks. You can find them at movenw.com. And if you wanted these tickets and you didn't get them, follow Move NW on Instagram, and they're going to give away another pair of tickets for the game on Thursday. So there's still a chance you could get another one to this game. All right, let me check. I think there's a super chat. There's actually super chats on Venmo as well that I should get to. Okay, so Sheed Bands has become a member. Well, welcome, man. Great to have you. Happy to join the crew. Venmo super chats, venmo.com Brian-Nemhauser. Chris Lorien offered to give a set of tickets, which was really nice. I do not have the bandwidth to be managing another ticket giveaway, but very nice of him, and thank you for that. Malachi Smith says, "Hi, Brian. Really enjoy your show every day. I've learned a lot from you by just watching the show. Just curious if you think we should turn toward more pass-heavy offense because our running game has struggled so bad, especially this past game. Keep up the great work. Go Hawks." Well, thank you, Malachi. I don't think it's as simple as become more pass heavy or not. I wish it was that simple. Part of the problem there is, you know, the pass game the Seahawks rely on is heavily play action oriented. And if there's no respect at all for the run game, then that's, at the very least, Clint Kubiak's going to be less likely to call those play action passes. Even though data implies that you can do that, you can be effective with play action even if your run game is not good. So I think you got to keep running the ball. I think your goal is to win a Super Bowl, and it is really, really hard to win a Super Bowl if you cannot run the ball with at least some effectiveness. So I think they got to keep plugging away. And it's not like they haven't had any success. Like, there was a 4-game stretch where they were a top 10 run game, run offense in terms of efficiency. This last game was a big, big step back. So, I will say this before I get to more of these super chats. Remember these Thursday night games. Remember the Rams versus 49ers game last year in the rain in San Francisco that was just gross. And Matt Stafford threw a ton of turnover-worthy throws in that game. Brock Purdy was terrible in that game. And then the Seahawks against the Bears. Wet weather, Thursday night game, 6-3. Like, it could be really ugly. And I don't think you can just ignore the run game in a game like that. I think you got to keep plugging away, and putting too much on Sam's shoulders is not necessarily the way to go. Joey Hamilton with last super chat here says, if you could add one Seahawk from a previous season to this team, who are you picking? I think beast mode would put us in a new stratosphere. I think I've answered this before. I mean, Walter Jones, to me, you put a Hall of Fame offensive lineman on there, it would be great. Steve Hutchinson would be another answer. You put him in there, that would be great. I think those two guys are the first ones to come to mind, because I think enhanced, you know, offensive line play would be great. I think Marshawn's a great answer too, just because of the attitude he brought to that team, and the confidence and swagger he played with. But that would be my answer. All right, I'm sure I'm forgetting things. I've been like juggling a million different things, but we're gonna wrap there, and hope that you guys all tune back in at 4:00 Pacific time tonight for Real Hawk Talk with Evan Hill and Jeff Simmons. We'll make our picks for this game. We'll have some fun doing that. So 4:00 Pacific time. Until next time, I am Brian Nemhauser. This has been another episode of Hawk Blogger Morning. Take care, y'all.